I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me, as always, Eric Green. Eric, what's up, man?
I have more breaking injury news this week.
On yourself or on the Raptors?
Well, neither, actually.
Walter? Oh, no.
Walter has been even less energetic than usual recently. And we discovered the reason was because we'd been putting boots on him for salt avoidance for his precious little paws. But then the boot was rubbing up against one of his, sort of upper paw area and creating a little cut. And now we have to carry him outside in order to go on walks. And we're not putting on the boots because we don't want that, that dry area to get worse and continue to bother him.
Eric, I hate to break this to you, but this is a scam. Walter has played you guys.
Is he playing?
Yeah, just to be able to get carried outside for walks.
Not impossible. I'm okay, Blake. How's it going?
I'm all right. It's the game on Sunday was really bad and really frustrating. And the vibes are back to being bad. This is the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast here at The Athletic. A reminder, if you don't subscribe to the written side, you can head to theathletic.com/we the six and get a discount on that side of things there, where you will see Eric writing about the Minnesota Timberwolves game and how it's just not very... It doesn't feel very Raptors-y right now, man.
Sure doesn't. That game... Forget that it was awful and they had no business winning. Like, it did seem like the Raptors are going to win this game that they have no business winning type game, which they really haven't had a lot of this year and had a plethora of in past years, or certainly like a lot of we're going to turn it on in this one quarter and take it away from here. And they had their chances. And a layup literally did a 180, if not a 360, around the rim before spilling out and possibly forcing overtime or at least tying the game for the time being. The Raptors find a way in a lot of those games in the past years, and they are very much not finding ways right now, and having the 19th-ranked defense has something to do with that.
Yes, it sure does. We're going to get into some of the specifics of where the Raptors are at right now, coming off of back-to-back losses once again. Just a reminder, of course, that Eric Green did not pick the games correctly this week, but although you got three of them right. You had them at 3-1 with win-win, loss-win.
I thought we only did three games. I think I said win, loss, win, because we recorded on Tuesday, so we only had the Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday game.
And here I am trying to give you credit for an extra W.
No, I don't want that.
Okay.
No, 1-2 instead of 2-1. I did get the win right and the loss. So I really called two of the three games correctly.
Yes, but big picture, you got all the important stuff wrong. The big picture.
Sure.
I mean, just unless you have a perfect week, I'm going to.
No, that's fair. I should have a perfect week by now, but I think that's more on the Raptors than it is on me. But maybe I need to adjust more to understand the team I cover more.
Yeah, you're relying too much on those Bayesian priors. All right, couple notes before we get into the Raptors' week. First of all, a couple injury updates for you. OG Anunoby still is not back from that.
Never coming back.
left calf strain. They certainly sounded optimistic that he'd play Sunday. There wasn't any indication of just how close he is, but the fact that we thought he was going to play Sunday and didn't suggests that, you know, maybe Tuesday's possible. Yuta Watanabe still out with a bad ankle sprain. He has not practiced yet. Patrick McCaw is back in practice and is, you know, I think has moved from week to week to day to day at this point. So keep an eye out for all those updates. The Raptors could certainly use some fresh bodies as they head into a week where they play the Bucks twice and then have a rematch with the Timberwolves. I mentioned earlier,
before we get to the meat of the podcast, I just want to say that in the comments of my story yesterday, there was the first, can we get McCaw back, please? He would look great at all those Terrence Davis minutes. Yeah. So we're there, baby.
I mean, the offense is going to look a certain way if you have McCaw, Bembry, and Stanley Johnson on the floor together. But those Fred VanVleet-led bench units, you know, aren't performing super well. But I also think OG helps with some of that because it changes your staggering pattern with Kyle and OG and then Fred.
The guy who is playing the most consistently of any of the Raptors might help.
Maybe the best wing defender in the league would help things. Okay, so I mentioned earlier you can go to theathletic.com/we the six if you don't subscribe to the written side. And, of course, Eric's piece on the Timberwolves, Eric's great profile on Yuta Watanabe this week. Well-timed, by the way. You know, all of those are great reasons to subscribe. It's also here 5.5 weeks out from the March 25th trade deadline. It's rumor season, Eric.
Oh, baby.
And our own Shams Charania reported in his latest Inside Pass piece on Monday. I will read the quote here and get ready, Eric, because you're going to have takes on this. The Raptors and Cavaliers are engaged in active talks on a deal that would send Andre Drummond to Toronto/Tampa, sources tell The Athletic. Discussions between the two sides picked up in the last few days, and Drummond was pulled from the lineup in Sunday's game against the Clippers due to rest. Multiple sources told The Athletic Drummond was rested due to his attitude and play recently, with Cleveland engaged on the trade market. I will add to that on my own that I have basically heard that Drummond's played his last game as a Cavalier as they look to move him here. Eric, a lot to unpack there with the Raptors and Drummond. I have a piece coming up on The Athletic that is probably up by the time this podcast airs. Reacting to this from the Raptors' perspective, you know, how would Drummond fit? What are the cap machinations to make something like that possible? Is Masai going to have to apologize for the you're better than Drummond open gym clip? Lots to unpack with a potential Drummond acquisition. But Eric, your initial reaction to this report from Shams?
Well, the first thing I want to do is maybe rumor explain and just say active talks is not the same thing as, I don't know, what's a word that's more like serious or progressing, almost like progressing. Like if there was progressing toward a deal, that's when you like start really figuring things out. Serious talks, probably a little more likely to happen. Active talks means they're talking, and if it's, you know, if it's being reported at this stage, you can assume that they aren't, that there's legitimacy to it, but I don't think it's on the verge of happening right now, this moment, which isn't to say it won't happen. Now, of course, it will happen before this podcast is over, given my ability to predict. But I think you would be, before I let you dive into the cap stuff, I think he would be a very good addition for their problems. They are the 29th defensive rebounding team in the league in terms of defensive rebounding percentage. They faced, incidentally, the 30th team in Minnesota last night, Sunday night, and they won the offensive rebounding battle 10-5. So got to stay in that penultimate spot. Way to go, guys. But, you know, he's obviously a bit of an overrated defender, but certainly worlds better than what they're getting. We've seen Aaron Baines just unable to really do that Marc Gasol thing where he's, even though he's not fleet of foot. He's playing the angles so well that it's very hard for quicker guards to get around him, which even by the end of Gasol's tenure in Toronto, people were complaining about. And, you know, he's limited offensively, but he is a good finisher at the rim. And the Raptors, other than Chris Boucher, who, you know, is, if there's any sort of body contact, he's not going to end up going, you know, totally vertically on a lob. They haven't really had that type of guy who can, just a strong rim roller who can finish like that. So there will be spacing problems, but there already are spacing problems when Baines and Siakam share the floor that we've discussed. I think it's a fit. Obviously, I mean, to me, it would mean that Norman Powell's almost certainly headed the other way. He's been playing great, and that worries me just because he's a dynamic driver and certainly a pretty good finisher at the rim, who on a team that doesn't have a lot of that. But you got to deal with the problems you have now, and since they're both likely to be free agents at the end of the year, I get it, but I think there's a long way to go before we're actually talking about a deal.
Yes, a long way to go for a number of reasons. The first of which is, depending on who's going out in a deal, a player like Chris Boucher still can't be dealt for a couple of weeks. Aaron Baines is past that date now, so he can be included, but the cap math is going to be pretty complicated. We'll talk about that in just a second. I just want to expand on in terms of fit. I do think he's actually, you know, Drummond's the weird type where, like, he was very overrated defensively for a while because of the defensive rebounds and, you know, that him getting an all-defensive vote was kind of a joke. I think he's maybe gone the other direction now where the pushback was too strong. He was very good in the Cavs start this year with their drop coverage, and he's a good rim deterrent. And then he has active hands in a way that, you know, if he's playing a more conservative drop coverage but can get his hands in lanes and swiping down in the post and stuff, I do think he fits a little of what Toronto wants to do there. Obviously, he's not as switchy as the Raptors would like, but neither is Aaron Baines. And then offensively, he's having like an uncharacteristically poor finishing season. But I think some of that is that like his usage rate is up to like 30%, and there's just no justification for Andre Drummond using 30% of.
Why is that happening on a Cleveland team that has like lots of exciting guards?
I don't really know, but
you haven't been watching a ton of Cavs.
No,
basketball?
I have. It's just like I actually think the Cavs have been one of the more fun league pass teams this year. It's just, you know, you don't really process in real time why shots are going a certain way. And I certainly don't think the Raptors would run as many post-ups for Drummond. They'd probably kill the idea of him trying to create for himself in the mid-range. But Drummond's not a bad passer. He's a good rim runner. So, you know, obviously he addresses some needs. Now, the issue, of course, beyond timing, is that you have to make salaries work in trades in the NBA, and Drummond makes $28.8 million. That means that the Raptors would have to send out at least $22.93 million based on where they are in the cap and tax hierarchy right now.
Could they throw in my salary at The Athletic to make it work? Yeah. So that's $3 million. So that's good.
Yeah. Shut up. So you're looking at, you know, let's assume that Kyle, Fred, Pascal, and OG are off the table, because you wouldn't be adding Drummond if you're subtracting one of those guys from the core. Then you're looking at Norman Powell at $10.5 million is your largest salary, and then you add Baines, and then you add a Stanley Johnson, and you're still not there. And then you add a McCaw, and suddenly it's a 4-for-1 deal where most of your second unit depth is gone. Or if you want to keep Norm and sweeten the draft considerations, then you're looking at 5 guys. And that creates complications because, first of all, Cleveland has to cut guys before the trade to create room to acquire them. And second, the Raptors then are not only taking on salary, which pushes them into the tax, which, you know, is possible, but in a expensive road year without playoff revenue and in a non-title contention year would be a bit strange. They'd also have to replace all of those players, which then drives your tax up even higher. You do have to have a certain number of guys on your roster for a certain amount of time, and you can't just fudge it with Utah and Jalen Harris active nights. So, and the 905 have not been impressive enough yet to fill those gaps. Gary Payton Jr., come on up. But otherwise, it's just hard to see how a 4-for-1 or 5-for-1 deal for a center who's an upgrade but not a contention level upgrade makes a lot of sense. And I don't mean that in like, you know, I'm not really worried about the long-term asset cost, because you look at Stanley Johnson, Patrick McCaw, you know, Aaron Baines, like those guys probably aren't back next year. And if they are, they're probably back on smaller or different deals after they've been renounced anyway. It's more just like, what does this team look like on the fly if you dump 4 or 5 guys for Drummond, and then suddenly you're a deeper tax team, and there's, you know, I still don't think Drummond puts Toronto in the Philly, Milwaukee, Brooklyn class. I think it pushes them to the very top of tier two, but I don't know that it you know, stabilizes them for those top matchups. So I have some not trepidations about Drummond as a fit on the Raptors, but I have some. The specifics of what a deal would look like give me some pause.
Math concerns.
Yeah.
Math concerns.
I guess my question then, Eric, that follows from this is, and obviously Shams, if Shams is reporting this stuff, it's legitimate. Shams does not miss very often.
He does not report lies. These are things that are happening.
However, because the Raptors are not a leaky organization, we have certainly seen instances where their interest in players maybe gets exaggerated on the market, because if you're the Cavs, you know that the Raptors aren't going to leak counter information. So I guess I'm wondering what you think about the idea of the Raptors are interested in Drummond, but maybe the Cavs are letting that be known as a matter of leverage.
I think that's plausible. Again, like for the reasons we discussed, I think he'd be a nice fit. And if you could make the math work, which is very difficult, you look at doing it. Even if it costs you Norm, you look at doing it. And I've had my concerns with Norm, but he's certainly, you know, he's looked the best he's looked all year, and sort of to the level that he was playing last year, more or less, recently. And that guy is pretty important to what the Raptors do. But this, you know, the Raptors have operated in a way in which they can be used this way. And I'm not even sure if that's a bad thing, because in theory, that just would make other teams, potentially your competition, more likely to give up more for Drummond in this case. So is that really a bad scenario for the Raptors, like helping the Cavs win a deal versus, I don't know, the Boston Celtics, let's just say randomly? No, but that is definitely possible as far as a thing is going on. I'm really, in these cases, I'm not sure how much a strategy like that would actually work. But, you know, we both know that teams aren't above trying to use this type of stuff for leverage. So I think, you know, the truth is, the full truth isn't reportable because one side is very likely not contributing to the reporting.
Yeah. All right. So that's, you know, you can read Shams's Inside Pass for a little more on that. You can read my reaction to it for a bit more of the cap stuff, and just goofing around about Drummond, because he has been like, I think Drummond unknowingly has a feud with, with Raptors fans, going back to the JV thing and like Poeltl dunking on him and James Johnson cocking that joint back. So let's look back at the week that was. The Raptors went 2-2 for the week and 1-2 since we last talked to you. The losses felt especially gutting, being that they were against the Celtics. And yes, fifth game in 7 nights, no OG, etc. But that felt like a winnable game. Had Shemi and Peyton Pritchard not just gone bananas from three, and then they lose to a bad Minnesota team. Eric, I was not on the postgame presser past Nick Nurse last night, but Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet spoke pretty openly about the vibes once again not being great. Can you take us through what Kyle and Fred had to say and your own read on where the Raptors are at right now, now back three games under 500?
Well, I've got to correct you a little bit, and as you said, you weren't on the call, so that's fine. But I'm not like sarcastically criticizing you. But Kyle actually seemed pretty copacetic about the whole thing, and that's like the funniest thing about this whole season is Kyle seems more or less like he's in a pretty good mood and isn't panicking. And he just said, you know, we've got to use this opportunity to get better. I asked him, point blank, if I told him at the beginning of the season that the offense was way ahead of the defense, and just as pointing out, the offense right now ranked eighth in the league, the defense 19th, what would he think about, like what would he think? Would he be surprised? And he sort of said, no, like the offense is simple and the defense is not, and we've lost major pieces. I'm not sure if he was being entirely truthful in that moment, but he did give me a thorough answer. So I guess I probably shouldn't doubt him. But when I asked Fred VanVleet that same question, he said, well, I'd probably ask you what our record was. So that was the sort of difference in tone. I think they both know that they've given too many winnable games away. And, you know, it's tough to say they gave them away because they played poorly. Like the Raptors were for most of the night, certainly in the third quarter, which was the most, in terms of one team playing better than the other, the most uneven quarter of basketball, they were the second best team on the floor last night. They did not deserve that game in the way we talk about teams deserving that game. But VanVleet was definitely very somber, very frustrated, short on answers, as most guys are right after a dispiriting loss. And I think, you know, they just can't understand. They don't understand why these, you know, pretty horrible quarters against pretty punchless teams like Minnesota, who, you know, they have Malik Beasley, who's fun. Anthony Edwards had a lot of really nice drives, against the Raptors. Karl Towns was good, but not like super dominant, but like especially in a matchup where he should have been super dominant.
Well, when you don't guard his pick and pops at all, he's gonna hit some threes on you.
So. Yeah, that happened late in the game, and we can talk a bit about Baines being on the floor in those minutes. I thought that was a bit curious. But yeah, VanVleet was really down about it. You know, Lowry was more, we've got to learn, we've got to get better. It is, you know, it's a shorter season, but it's still a marathon and we have time to improve. But the reality is they have two back-to-backs sandwiched around the hamburger that is another game against Minnesota. I guess that would be like one of those really crappy fast food hamburger places that has like the one-inch patties, kind of. Metaphor unnecessary. But those are against Milwaukee and Philadelphia, which,
what,
you know...
What kind of burgers are you eating that the patty is 1 inch thick and the buns are somehow still double the size on either end?
I'm not eating those.
That's a 5-inch burger.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I'm not... Don't make me do the math. The point is, they have back-to-backs in Milwaukee, at home against Philadelphia. Those are the best two teams in the Eastern Conference right now. They both are bigger teams that require more bulk. So if you want to go back to the Drummond trade, it wouldn't be the worst time for that to go down. If it is going to go down... and they really could have used that game last night because now they're three games under 500 and you can understand VanVleet's mood, I guess, is my larger point.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay, Eric, so there's three games under 500. The mood is not great from Fred's perspective. They have five very difficult, you know, four of those games are quite difficult. The Bucks have lost three straight as they actually try to do new things and not be as predictable. But they're still the Bucks and pretty good. And Philly has been probably the best team in the Eastern Conference so far. I was going to save this for the end as kind of our closing wrap, but let's get to it now since you teed it up. If the Raptors go 1-4 or 2-3 on this trip, you know, we've kind of danced around this question a lot this year, and I think we both think that Kyle Lowry determines his own fate in terms of what he wants for the rest of the season. But with something like, hey, the Raptors are interested in Drummond, if this continues going this way where the performance is underwhelming relative to what the perceived quality of the team is, I guess what I'm getting at is, like, the Raptors can still kind of rely on the fact that they're top 10 in net rating and they're top 12 in SRS and all of these things that are better predictors of future performance. But the future becomes a shorter window of time and the performance to date becomes a longer window of time as we go on. If they are 14 and 18 or 13 and 19 coming out of this five game set, where are you at? Like at what point do we start talking about Norman Powell destinations as a seller rather than what Norman Powell can get you in a buy scenario?
Yeah. I think they have time to make those decisions. I don't mean to avoid.
No, the question, I get what you're saying. We're five and a half weeks out.
Yeah. Like, I think you don't even need to think about it until the break, really, because no team is really going to make its deal that is going to take itself off the table for Norman Powell at this point, I don't think. Like, Norman Powell can probably be had. The Raptors would want something in return, certainly, but it's not an overly complicated deal to make. So I just don't think they have to make that decision that quickly. The East is like a mess in that there are a bunch of teams, you know, between three games under 500 or four games under 500 and two games over 500. Like, it's not like the Raptors are out of a top four seed at this point. Like, that's still totally on the table, even though the schedule is looking pretty rough right now. But you certainly turned that way. I wrote it last night. You only have so, and I wrote it in specifically talking about Pascal Siakam, who went 2-for-11 in the restricted area last night. not all those shots are created equally, but the process was basically right. That was my point. And we've talked about this already this year. The longer you go where the process is all right, but the results aren't coming, that starts mattering less. And a bad trip, especially one in which you look clearly inferior to some of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, it has to color your perception a little bit. So I don't think it does anything. Let's say they go 1-4. I don't think it sets in stone that this will be their approach going toward March 25th, but it really means you've got a, like, that's basically the end of your okay, let's see what happens window, and you have like a turnaround has to happen pretty much immediately after that. We're getting to that point.
We sure are. March 5th.
Did I hedge enough in that answer?
You hedged fine.
Thank you.
I don't think you're, you know, wrong. I think March 5th is kind of the target deadline. And because, I mean, I love trade season. I love doing my all your trade ideas are bad column and stuff like that. But I do sometimes feel like a killjoy being the person who has to be like, okay, we're 5.5 weeks out. Like, just because Harden got traded doesn't mean the market is firing and stuff. But anyway, we have some time, and the Raptors have some time to figure things out. You mentioned Pascal going 2 of 11 in the restricted area. The one other thing I wanted to talk about coming out of the Timberwolves game to get your feel on, Pascal Siakam has turned his season around in the big picture. I thought he's been, you know, you take away those first 8 or 9 games, he's been more himself. His offensive process has been a little sharper, you know, getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line, using the defensive attention as a playmaker. And we've even seen his defense come back up after kind of a disappointing start on that end. However, he continues to struggle late in games. He's 3 of 16 with 2 turnovers in 40 clutch minutes as defined by NBA.com. Those are game within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. You could change your definition of what clutch is. I don't think it would change the conclusion here that he has really struggled in those scenarios. Eric, early on I would have said that Siakam's struggles in those scenarios were as much psychological as anything. He, you know, that's when he was going through it, the misses against Golden State and Portland. The body language was, you know, pretty terrible after those misses. And again, to go back to the vibes, they weren't great. I thought on Sunday, at least, you know, he got to the front of the rim. You could certainly argue he should have tried to dunk that or finished a little stronger. You could argue that, you know, I mean, maybe that just wasn't the play, an ISO against Jaden McDaniels, although McDaniels is a rookie. You know, I don't know. I think the thing I took away from it was Siakam, like, not being able to believe that rimmed out instead of being down on himself and upset was maybe a nice mental shift. But he's 3 of 16 with 2 turnovers in those 40 clutch minutes. Is that kind of random, or are we to the point where it's a little damning at this point? You know, where are you, like, I guess what I'm getting at is, like, what is your appetite for continuing to feed these opportunities to Siakam versus exploring what other late game options might look like?
Well, I mean, I think Kyle Lowry's got a nice little share of them, maybe not at the, like, the last possession of the game, but he's doing his share of the work in crunch time, I think. And those probably a little more often lead to passes versus shots, which is a, you know, maybe an issue in itself. I don't think you can fault what happened. Like, that was a great look. And a few people did say, why isn't he dunking that? To which I theoretically agree, but not having the ability to power through even somebody as slender as Jalen McDaniels. Is it Jalen or Jaden?
Jaden
McDaniels. Thank you. Like, I don't know what it takes out to you to, like, go across the body of Jaden McDaniels. Like, can you just dunk after that? Is it possible? Like, it looks like you should be able to, but you're
Jaden McDaniels is really long.
You're absorbing a lot of contact there from an NBA guy. So I don't know how possible that is. So anyway, that was a great look. The one against Portland was a pretty good look. The one against Golden State wasn't, but it was makeable. So I think, you know, again, it's sort of like my last answer my answer to your previous question. It's like, you're getting there. Like, it's no longer just random, but it's I still sort of believe he's capable of it. Like, we've seen him turn his game around in a way that some of those very shots are falling more regularly. So why can't they fall in the final minutes? Like, I don't think there's some sort of magic about the last few minutes. Now, if he were just not seeing what was happening defensively, if he were shrinking from the moment and, you know, getting off the ball way too quickly or taking bad shots, that'd be one thing. But he's gone, like, in the three situations I can think of, he's gone two really good shots, and, you know, I'm fine with it. My concern is pretty low, I think.
Okay, well, that's good. You know, I still...
So you sound a bit more skeptical.
Not skeptical. I think he is capable, like you said. I would just maybe like to see a little more variance in what those plays look like. You know how I feel about road ISOs, and I know that it's, you know, low turnover and trusting your best guys and stuff like that. But especially with how effective the Raptors are sometimes on their sideline out of bounds in other situations, I don't know. I'd just maybe like to see a little bit more. Now, of course, I don't really want the ball in Fred's hands dribbling the air out of it too much, maybe. You know, Kyle is still the guy who, on merit, I would have the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
But also, he's about to turn 35, and maybe that's not the smartest.
Yeah, and when you said, like, we've talked about this season being transitional in so many ways. So, yeah. Like, this is part of it. You know, you've got to... wins and losses are still super, super important. But if you're trying to transition to whatever's next, at least a little bit... He's got to get the, like, Fred and Pascal have to be a big part of the way things are closing. And OG eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think the interesting closing elements for the Raptors are what they look like defensively, right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to, you know, they're going to have OG out there. I would imagine they're going to close smaller more often than not. You had some issue with Baines playing. You know, Baines played 24 minutes and was even plus minus. In that game Sunday, but I also just think, you know, he hasn't been super effective overall. Now this new quote unquote starting lineup does have a plus 3.7 net rating, but you combine that with the earlier starting unit, and they're basically a neutral. Which, if you're a team as good as the Raptors, you don't want your most heavily used lineup to only be neutral. Baines, of course, with the worst net rating of anyone in the rotation as well, at minus 4.2. So what would you have gone back to Boucher, who wasn't having his best night? Would you have gone to that Bembry look where Siakam's the de facto center a little earlier? How would you have played that out, Eric?
Yeah, it was tough with Boucher, who I think I still would have liked to... I just think, given what he's meant to this team, he needs more than 18 minutes a night. Generally, I concede that he was having, you know, one of his worst games of the year, for sure. There was one possession in which he spun and dunk that Chris Boucher, who was providing the help defense because he got screened off the ball, just went on the wrong side. Like, it was just awful, and it left a free spin and dunk for I almost called him Drummond, for Carl Towns around DeAndre Bembry. So I think I probably would have tried that. I think a lot of, like, the pick and pop threes, you know, he still probably gets those shots off if Boucher's on the floor, but maybe they're a bit tougher. Maybe it changes what they're doing. And I think the Raptors were responding to the Towns post-up situations pretty decently as a whole. Now, Minnesota hitting as many threes as they did was obviously a concern, but, you know, that was their game plan. And if they were going to get beat by that, then you get beat by that. And I think they certainly did to an extent. Ricky Rubio continues to be one of the best three-point shooters in the league. If the Raptors are his opposition. But I think I would have gone to Boucher. And if that really wasn't working, maybe to Bembry. Again, this isn't a huge thing for me. I don't want to say it's not why they lost, because they lost the game by 2 points. So, like, any number of things were why they lost. But it wasn't, you know, I just want my best players playing, unless there's a huge, huge mismatch. And I don't think Towns was playing in a way in which that was going to be this thing that necessarily did them in. because they were done in anyway by a different thing. Anyway, that's a rambly answer, but that was my only thought. Like, this hasn't been Baines hasn't been a guy who's closed out many games. He's not playing well. He limits what you can do offensively, and I just wasn't a huge fan of that decision.
Understandable. Baines has I don't know. It's a weird thing where, like, even now that he's played like somewhat neutral, there's enough bad tape behind us that he almost has to overperform. Like if you came into this season, we're like, yeah, Baines is going to be relatively neutral. He'll play low minutes and then you'll go to other lineups. I think you would have been fine with that. But the fact that he's, you know, working from a hole, and the fact that anytime he plays with any lineup that isn't just the starters, it's a disaster. I don't know. And it wasn't, you know, I think the big thing was that Van Vliet and bench unit, which I don't mean to put the blame on Van Vliet by describing it as that. It's just a descriptor. You know, they were on the wrong end of a 17-2 run, and it's just, it's
not. A bad third quarter. That stretch was like a bad decision-making quarter, but it's also a...
Look at who he's playing with, though.
It's like a tough Denver lineup.
And Johnson are spacing, and Davis is making the decisions he's making, so you can't put the ball in his hands. And we know that Van Vliet's kind of most dynamic when he can work off the ball a little bit more. Anyway, let's look ahead. Eric, we talked about two at Milwaukee, one at Minnesota, and then back home. And of course, home, we're doing air quotes around for the rest of the season for two against Philly. As of that first Philly game, it will be 12 games in 11 cities over one stretch, just bouncing around. That's a lot. No time in one place. No excuses, though, correct? Sure. As Patrick Mutombo, head coach of Raptors 905, said about their first back-to-back the other night, things like that allow a cushion for failure. And I thought that term was really nice. Him trying to play down that cushion for failure, that schedule things leave you with. Anyway, it's a tough stretch. There's no question about it. We will talk to you next. Assuming that Drummond stuff doesn't actually happen, we'll probably talk to you next in between the Philly games. So that's Eric, two at Milwaukee, one at Minnesota, and one against Philly. What do you got?
I'll say loss, loss, win, win. Okay. I don't know.
Sure.
Anyway, that's my guess. I'll be wrong. And when I've been wrong this year, it's usually because the Raptors have underperformed those predictions. So get ready for another panic podcast next week, I guess.
All right. Speaking of other podcasts, Eric, that was fun last week when we did a different podcast together. That'll be out the week of that NBA break. So coming out of I can't remember if it's coming out of the All-Star week or heading into All-Star week, but people get a little extra dose of us. That was fun.
Yeah. And I've been revisiting the band we talked about a lot since then, which has been a nice addition to my life. I hadn't listened to them in a while, and especially after... it's really hard to talk obliquely about it. After a certain point, I became less into that band. So just like hearing those singles with fresh ears from the later albums, it's nice. But yes, like the podcast itself was also fun. I dug maybe a bit deeper into the album than I had previously from a lyrical perspective. And it was a cool experience.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and sorry it took so long to have you on. Be a house party.
Yeah.
All right,
we'll do it again sometime, maybe. Probably not.
We'll see how that episode's received. You know, this is Columbia House Party is a meritocracy. So
unlike Raptors clutch touches.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. Or yeah. Anyway, let's avoid where we were going off of that one. This is the end of Raptors Reasonables for this week. Once again, you can go to theathletic.com/we the six for a discounted subscription, or click off any of mine and Eric's articles, including the my Drummond reaction piece, which I can confirm is up by the time you're listening to this, because it went up while we were recording. Eric, thank you so much, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Blake. See ya!